Great. So let's we'll quickly go around here in San Francisco, just introduce ourselves, and then everyone on the phone can just say their name, and then we can dive in. So this is Ellie.
This is Holden.
This is Carrie.
This is Devin.
Phil.
Tim.
Tom in the car.
Bridget,
this is
Julia.
Jake is here.
This is Julia.
Great. So I think that is everyone, and Rob will be here in a minute. So like I said in my email, I think our we don't have any formal business we need to vote on in this meeting. And so our plan was to give kind of some updates for you on what's happening, and then cover a couple topics that people emailed in response to my email about the meeting, and then, you know, just open it up for questions. And if we can, you know, keep this to an hour, that'd be great. If people have more questions, though, that they want to make sure we cover, you know, we're happy to chat about them. So let me sort of quickly dive into some of the big updates. So maybe it's worth everyone just muting their phones because we're getting a little bit of background noise. And then if you want to talk, to just dive in. Okay, great. So on the GiveWell side of things, you know, we're pushing towards the end of the year when we release our updated recommendations. We are shooting to release them in a month on November 16th. We don't anticipate any major updates, so the top charities will probably look roughly the same as they have in past years. We've had really strong growth in web traffic and money moved this year, and so I think it's reasonable to anticipate, for 2015 that we'll have, you know, more than $20 million worth of money moved, excluding Good Ventures. So that's, you know, big number. Last year that number was 13. So we've definitely continued to see growth, and we expect more of it. And then on the open fill side, Holden just published a pretty big blog post that goes through the major updates there. Anything you want to add?
No, I mean, the focus of the year has been hiring, and that's really where we put all our effort. And, you know, Chloe is here on criminal justice. She's new. Lewis is coming soon for farm animal welfare. Biosecurity search is in its late stages. We have a trial for potential risk from advanced artificial intelligence. And the next phase is to really onboard these people, get to know them, and then figure out how to accelerate the grant making once we've really built out those relationships and capacity. And then on the science front, it's, you know, things are more preliminary, but I think now that we can see what it looks like when things get more developed, it's easier to understand what we're trying to do in science, which is get to somewhere comparable to that.
Cool. Another big project that we've been working on this year is the updating of the, I shouldn't say updating, but the sort of reskinning of the GiveWell website, and then a launching of an independent open philanthropy website. And it's definitely been a longer process than we had hoped. So we've talked about this in past meetings. We started the website engagement in January, and the initial deadline that the design firm was shooting for was mid-April. And there's been just a long series of back and forths to, you know, nail down all of the to basically get the websites publishable, because there have been things that haven't been coded up to specs. Obviously this took longer than we hoped. We anticipate launching the open fill website, you know, imminently, like within a month at the outside. We very much would like to have the new GiveWell site up for giving season, but I think it, you know, given that we have both of these sites in the mix and that open fill is so much closer, we're not sure that we're going to hit that deadline with the GiveWell website now. So these are both things that, we've definitely made progress, and we're getting close to the end. So this will happen, but it has been significantly longer than, you know, it's been a longer process than we hope to actually make them go live. And so that means that we missed the You know, the book that we talked a little bit in the past about the books that were coming out this year. And, you know, so obviously the website, you know, missed all three of them, and that's too bad. But, you know, I think it's it'll be an improvement on the GiveWell side. And then, you know, from the OpenPhil side, hopefully it will, you know, really make a lot of progress on providing people who are interested in OpenPhil with the place to go to get all of the relevant OpenPhil content, and will, you know, start this process of distinguishing these two entities more completely, so that people are not don't have to come and land on the GiveWell website to find OpenPhil research and an OpenPhil grant that doesn't really fit with the vast majority of the architecture and the content on the site. Anything you guys want to add about that, Holden or Carrie?
No, I mean, I think it's very, very hard to understand what OpenPhil is and what it's doing right now, and I think it'll get way easier when the website's up, and if it doesn't, blame me, because I think we actually, we think we have some good content. We think it is addressing the issue, and it just sucks to not have our own website.
So let me just pause there. Does anyone have any questions or comments on what we've covered so far? I know we kind of hit some big topics at a very superficial level, and we're happy to dive in if people are interested, but we want to be responsive to your questions. All right, Holden, so one of the things that someone emailed in, you know, one of the board members about this meeting was, you know, something that's definitely happened this year is that the public profile of effective altruism has grown a lot. I think it's probably one of the primary drivers of the increased web traffic we've got this year. And I think, like, an interesting question to discuss is how we're thinking about the risks and rewards of being associated with the effective altruism movement and how we're trying to manage that.
Yeah.
Holden's going to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah,
and
I mean...
I just want to say Rob just joined the call. Sorry, Holden.
Yeah, hi, Rob. So, I mean, one high-level principle is that our PR strategy, when in doubt, we're just totally naive and honest. So, I mean, that's like, my default resting place on EA is if someone asks me a question about EA, I answer it honestly, and we try and give an honest picture of where we stand with respect to EA, and that honest picture is that, you know, there are certain values that, like, certainly the, you know, co-founders of GiveWell, a lot of the employees have, and that GiveWell as an organization is very related to, which is the idea of doing as much good as you possibly can, seeing, you know, human empowerment and flourishing as things to be conceptually maximized, which means that if you helped some people but you could have helped more, then you could have done better. I think that's, you know, it's an unusual framework, it's an unusual way of thinking, and it is kind of at the core of effective altruism, and I wouldn't say it is the core of GiveWell, but it's, you know, it's a very important value, and so there's an important alignment there. I think there was a post a couple of years ago where we said, you know, we are a part of the nascent effective altruist movement or the effective altruist community. I think that is right. I don't think we should be, like, shying away from it or downplaying the extent to which, you know, another thing I'll say is that, like, I think because of this alignment, I think that the community, the effective altruism community, includes a lot of the people who we have found kind of most intellectually stimulating, who have, you know, raised many of the ideas that kind of challenge what we're doing.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If
you
need help, hang up and then dial the operator.
I'm sorry for that.
That message is brought to you by someone's cell phone. it's a message not by that cell phone. And so where was I? I mean, we were, so I think also a lot of people in the community are the people we found have, like, been really good at challenging us to think about new things and different things and, you know, engaging with our content in an intellectual way. So, you know, because of all that, we call ourselves a part of the community. There's, you know, no way in which we're kind of, like, downplaying or hiding the fact that we like this idea. We like a lot of the people, not all, you know, not everything about, but a lot of the people in the community and a lot of the ideas around it. I went to the Effective Altruism Summit and spoke. We encouraged employees to go. A lot of them went. At the same time, you know, GiveWell is an organization that recommends top charities, and you don't have to be an effective altruist to use it. And I also think there's a lot of stuff going on in the effective altruism community that we're not comfortable with, and there's different levels of it. You know, there's stuff that I'm not comfortable with. There's stuff that, you know, other people aren't comfortable with. And there's no reason we need to, you know, have all the baggage of effective altruism front and center for GiveWell. So, you know, the place we're at is if you go to GiveWell.org, you won't see anything about effective altruism. But if you Google GiveWell effective altruism, you'll find GiveWell saying, you know, in a blog post saying, yeah, we're pretty much an effective altruist organization. So that seems like a reasonable place for us to be. And when we talk about it, we say, you know, we're excited. We like a lot of the people in the community. We like a lot of the ideas. We're excited about this. Like, that doesn't mean we agree with everything that's coming out of this community. And we don't think, you know, you need to take all the baggage of effective altruism to find our service valuable. And, you know, another final thing I'll say is I would say effective altruism is a bigger deal for OpenPhil than it is for GiveWell, because I think OpenPhil is, like, is less of what it's doing is really coming from the data and putting together uncontroversial stuff, and more of what it's doing is coming really from values. And, you know, the best match, I would say, for our values, it's not a perfect match, but probably the best match out there, if you want to point to a community that shares values, is that community. So it is kind of a bigger thing there, and I think, you know, as the two develop their own separate brands, that'll probably be more visible. I don't know, that's what I have to say on that.
Ellie, you mentioned the bummer of missing out on having the new site with the three books out this year. What has been the impact of that raised profile in terms of GiveWell without the new site? What did we potentially miss out on?
We've seen this significant growth in web traffic and money moved that I think is heavily driven by the increased profile of effective altruism. I think to some extent it's just the books.
We don't really have any basis for saying that except that the growth is much stronger this year than last year, right?
No, I mean, we see where the traffic is coming from.
Okay.
And there's just been like a significantly more articles like Huffington Post, New York Times, Vox, and, you know, I think these are, there's a lot of discussion of this topic that's driving the web traffic. The thing we don't know is like how different this would be with the improved website. So I think it's hard to, I don't have even a good way of thinking about like the cost, cause I don't have a great benchmark of how much of a difference a better site would have made to that experience.
Yeah, I'd be a little surprised that it's a huge difference. It's just like, ultimately our website, there's a lot of stuff on it, but ultimately it mostly comes down to like, you come to our site, there's a big orange button that says top charities, and the top charities page is like a lot of, I don't know, it just, I think it's good to update the website. The website's getting real old, we should update it. I'd be kind of surprised if it was really a massive difference. It's like the new website is not going to be massively different in terms of how people use it. The main difference from that perspective is going to be that we are going to have a better quick start guide that helps people get, you know, all the big picture of what GiveWell is about and what it has to offer a little bit more quickly, which I think is a good benefit, but probably not earth-shaking. I don't know. Is that sound fairly?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think like the way we might end up knowing down the line is one of the things we do is we try to have conversations with donors who've given to our top charities and ask them what they thought when they found us, how they vetted us, how they became confident in GiveWell. We know what that story has been over the last 6 years with our current website. And I can imagine having a better answer for you, Tim, you know, 2 years from now when we've had conversations with people who've experienced the new site, and we may be able to see that some of what they say, some of how they found us, how likely they seem to have been to, or how necessary it was that once they found us, they would certainly be convinced of what we were doing versus needing a little more of a push to get into it. So I think it's possible we'll see some of those changes. And if we did, then we would have a better sense of the impact of having the new website. But I think it's probably going to be small enough and subtle enough that it will take, you know, that type of change to really notice it.
Do you track conversion rates from, you know, the traffic that you can tie to an article about Will McCaskill's book, for instance, versus, you know, just something arriving at Google to see if there's some deeper resonance from the people who have been discovered the EA movement?
We have some of that data. So there's nothing we're doing actively with that data right now. We have most of it. So, you know, we know who donates based on where they came from, but we don't have the capability without a lot of manual effort to connect amounts given with where people came from, and amounts matter a lot to determining how much the source matters. That's something that we're also hoping to get to eventually, but it hasn't been at the top of the list.
And that also wouldn't catch if like someone's coming back to read a bit for a second time before pressing the button, like donating, right?
Yeah,
that's right.
And that's I think a big thing, so that's always gonna be a little tough. But we could have a better idea of it than we have.
One of the things I noticed that there was a recent post on traffic, and the traffic numbers and the small donor numbers were very strong, I think, in the most recent quarter. And I was just curious, do you have much sense of the connection? I guess my naive estimation would be that growth in traffic among total users and in small donors has a pretty strong correlation to big donors. It's just kind of there's more randomness because there are fewer big donors, and therefore, you know, if you get 100,000 small users, you're going to get some X number of big donors that are, you know, sort of random. I guess is there any discrepancy? Any reason to think there's a discrepancy between big donors and small donors, other than sort of random driven, or is my naive assumption is in the ballpark?
I think it's in the ballpark, and it's just we're not sure how much noise there is around the larger donors.
Is it fair to say that neither of you would agree that effective altruism is the last social movement we'll ever need?
Yes. It's fair to say we would not agree with that. we recruit from that community. We've gotten some awesome hires from that community. We've gotten some awesome ideas from that community. I find it like just good to be able to, you know, there's a bunch of people, and it's like we're all agreeing that we should do as much good as we can. And it's not like a weird concept. Like that, all that stuff is great. But yes, there's stuff that we're not comfortable with.
Are you guys, sorry, this is Jake. Are you guys able to elaborate a little bit on what you mean by there's things you're not comfortable with?
Well, I mean, so the person who just, I think it was Tim. So there was a comment at the Effective Altruism Summit, for example, where someone said, "I think effective altruism could be the last social movement the world will ever need." I mean, I don't know how much detail I want or need to go into, but it's a community of people who I think are very idealistic, not necessarily, very. I think a lot of people are like pretty green in a lot of ways. Like, there's a lot of people who are kind of like philosophers and programmers. And there's a lot they don't know, and there's a fair amount of overconfidence in the community. I mean, there's a lot of overconfidence in the community, I would say. There's a lot of people who are very excited about themselves for having all these ideas about how to make the world better, and a lot of these ideas are, like, a little bit half-baked, and they're, you know, over-enthusiastic about them and think that they've, like, made more progress than they have and that they've got more insight to add on top of what the rest of the world has to offer than they actually have. And so you see a lot of people who I think are just kind of, you know, who are exaggerating the import of what they've done and what they've thought of. And to an extent that sometimes I think minimizes the good done by other people all over the world to an extent that I'm totally uncomfortable with. So that's an example of something. I don't know, there's some other random stuff. I mean, there's a variety of causes that people are excited about, but I think they don't include all the causes that we're excited about. And I think there's a certain kind of philosophical framework that I think is leading people to some fairly strange decisions. In most cases, I think the causes that effective altruists are excited about are, I think they're good causes. I think they're excellent causes. I think that sometimes they're like, how good they are gets exaggerated, and people come out saying, well, you know, things like, such and such cause is like a rounding error compared to this other cause I'm excited about, and that's stuff that I'm, you know, totally not on board with and totally not comfortable with. So, there's kind of a bias toward people who think in certain patterns and it leads them to conclusions that we don't always agree with. I think I've given a pretty good sketch of that by now. I mean, I can go on. Yeah.
No, I got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Rob here. Last question about this. I just wonder, assume some set of circumstances in the future where the people or the organizations that are expressing the views that you just described as disagreeing with routinely in their other public expressions point to GiveWell as an exemplar of effective altruism. How do you think about that as, I guess, either a public relations thing or something that you would need to comment on proactively, reactively on your site as it exists?
Yeah, first let me just add one more category of thing I'm not comfortable with, because I think this one's kind of important, although I'm only speaking for myself here. I haven't really checked out where everyone is on this, but, you know, there's a component to it, too, that's like, you know, how much good are you doing, and at what point should you feel bad that you're not doing as much good as you can? And I think sometimes it gets into territory where, you know, people have expectations of themselves and others that I think are unrealistic and or unreasonable and or are just contributing to a lot of people like feeling guilty, feeling bad about themselves in ways that aren't productive and aren't actually making the world better. And so, you know, you hear some stuff, I think, in some ways I even thought, you know, Larissa's book kind of has some of this in it for me, that just, you know, there are people who I think feel bad about every dollar they're not giving to charity. And that's not something I personally would ever want someone to feel. It's not something I personally feel. I'm not a person who feels bad about that stuff myself. I don't think people should feel bad about it. I don't want them to, and I'm not really comfortable with the elements of EA that kind of point that way. So anyway, so what do we do when people are expressing these views that, you know, and then pointing to us as an exemplar? I mean, I think it's how we handle most PR. It's like, if something is happening and it's not a big deal, we can always just do nothing. If something seems to be a big deal because we're hearing about it over and over again and there's misconceptions that are causing problems for us, then we can make a statement. And, you know, I think it's all just, we see the data come in over time. It's what's a problem for us and what isn't a problem for us. There, you know, I don't really care what, like, random people on the internet, you know, think as a general principle. But if we feel like we're losing donors because of the way that, you know, certain media is getting disseminated, or we feel like people who we want to work with as partners, as information sources, are uncomfortable with us because they think we're associated with this other thing, you know, then we would make a public statement and we would be able to point people to it. And I'm not too worried about it because there's nowhere on the internet where you can support the statement that GiveWell supports X, where X is some uncomfortable thing from effective altruism. That's, you know, the only things that we're on record as supporting are things we're comfortable supporting as an organization. And that's not the whole platform. That's not the whole community. So, you know, then if we made an additional public statement that we explicitly don't support X, I just think at that point, like, I wouldn't be that worried because it's not gonna be that hard to get straightened out on where we stand.
But just, I mean, one other possibility, which you didn't mention, would simply just say, which I'm pretty sure you guys think, that GiveWell as an organization does not feel responsible for contributing to effective altruism as a movement. You guys are doing your work, whether or not you're bundled in, you know, organizationally into movement building is never something that I've perceived you've been interested in.
Right.
So you could proactively establish a certain distance from organizational identity with movement building.
Yeah, I mean, I think for now, I think what we're doing right now is working, which is that we're just not really talking about it much, and I think that's an accurate state. Like, we have talked about it in a couple blog posts where we said, hey, we think this stuff is exciting, but we don't have it, you know, we're not talking about it all the time, and we're not, like, going out and movement building, and I think that's all an accurate characterization of where we stand in the community. So I think what we're doing now is okay. But yeah, I mean, if someone asks us, do we feel responsible for moving the building, we'd say no. I mean, people have asked us why Open Phil is not funding effective altruism outreach, and I think that's kind of a complicated question. And we've drafted a blog post, and we actually haven't decided yet whether it's going up on our blog or whether we're just going to put it somewhere else. So that's a good question. It's a little bit in the weeds, but that's that's certainly something we're doing.
But just to be clear, my issue is not what GiveWell has done in the past or Open Phil vis-a-vis effective altruism movement, but what other people who identify as movement builders say publicly and routinely about GiveWell, which is to point to you pretty routinely as a central player in the movement.
I don't think people are pointing to us as... I think people are pointing to us as a really useful information source, as a group that has some numbers that people like to cite, as a place to go if you want to give to charity. I don't think anyone is pointing to GiveWell and saying, GiveWell thinks you should feel bad if you're not giving X percent of your income, or, you know, GiveWell thinks that, you know, this cause dominates that cause or whatever. I mean, except things we actually do believe, like that, you know, that if you want to help low-income people, your dollar goes further overseas. So I don't see people pointing to us in ways. With all the issues that I might have with the community, I haven't seen people point to GiveWell in a way that's bothered me very much, if at all. I think people point to us, they say, hey, you know what's great? Giving a lot of money to effective charities. How do you find those effective charities? Why don't you try GiveWell? Well, I'm comfortable with that.
Of course, but I'll drop this here because I also agree with everything you just said. But the question for me is not, are people saying things which mischaracterize what GiveWell is or does or cares about, but rather whether other people identify GiveWell organizationally as an essential or central, you know, organization in the movement of effective altruism, which, in light of our earlier conversation, has been characterized not by GiveWell, but by some silly and disagreeable statements that, when you're pointed to by the very same people as an exemplar of an organization in the movement, you run the risk of being bundled into in the public eye, even though you don't bear any responsibility for it on your website.
I just don't feel like this is a problem that we've come across, so maybe we should take it offline.
Sure. Okay.
Are we at the ask any question you want to stage?
Yeah, we definitely are.
This is Tom. I was going to ask a question. I'm curious if you guys have, just kind of curious about the sort of operating relationship between GiveWell and Open Phil, and sort of if you've seen any sort of evolution in that, if you had any further thoughts about how it should work. Is it working well now? What are sort of the issues or opportunities there, I guess, the general question.
Yeah, so we're getting much more active about splitting the two apart. So, you know, launching a new website is going to be big. It's going to be, you know, some content lives one place, some content lives the other place. We may do a little bit of gradual transition, but, that I think is going to be big for separating the brands. And then separating the organizations is in progress now. I mean, we've made real headway on that. And, you know, we're in the process of creating an LLC and a C3 that will be Open Phil. And then, you know, not that much is going to change practically for, like, people in the office, because it's already the case that some people mostly work on one, some people mostly work on the other, some people do both. People who do both can bill the one that's not their primary employer. So I think... in terms of, like, our day-to-day experience, not much is changing. Everything is just evolving very slowly and naturally. But in terms of, like, perceptions and structures and organizations and websites, I think that's, you know, we're going the direction that they're going to be two separate things.
Hey, it's Bridget. My question about the transition of Open Phil to its own organization is more from a governance perspective, and sort of what we as the board should be prepared to do or be supportive of. I'm presuming you'll get second board for that, and I'm wondering if you have a timeline.
We don't have a timeline yet on separating the organizations. We are going to get a separate board. We haven't finalized what that separate board is going to look like, but it might be done more as a, like, I think OpenPhil is going to be more in a foundation model and less in a, like, public charity model, even though it might be, you know, might be structured as a public charity. So that is, like, one factor that's playing in. But beyond that, I should probably just... I don't know. That's probably as much as I'll say for now. Seems like as much as I need to. I mean, we don't have a timeline on that yet.
In terms of resource allocation now and going forward as you more formalize that split, how are you guys thinking about, I guess, kind of dividing up attention span and time between the two organizations? I think you mentioned in a, I think you mentioned before that you're kind of using GiveWell as a training ground for people to move over to OpenPhil in some respects. But I'm just wondering, like, if you're still actively hiring just for GiveWell itself, if you're mostly focused on growing out OpenPhil, or what that thought process is.
Yeah, I don't think the training ground thing is quite right. I mean, I would say that. People come on, and they come on, you know. So this is the thing that I think we have no timeline on changing and might be a long time before it changes, which is that, you know, workflow-wise, the two are quite integrated, and I like it that way because I do think a lot of the skills and a lot of the qualifications are pretty similar. They're not totally overlapping. And it's also just the fact that, like, a lot of what determines how we, you know, how we allocate people is like our read on people's strengths and weaknesses. And so, you know, Ellie and I have enough like experience working with each other and trusting each other that, I don't know, for me, it's like very useful. And I think for Ellie, it's very useful that we can work with people and then we can share information and like we can have a pretty good predictive ability of like how something's going to go. So I don't know. I still feel like having the two work together very closely and fluidly is very useful. And I don't really have a timeline on that ending because it seems really useful. I don't particularly want it to end. I don't think the training ground thing is quite right. I would say that people come on and we find some work they can do that is like good initial work for them, and then we find, you know, more work that's more of a challenge. And, you know, I think it's usually the case that like the very first assignments are often GiveWell stuff, though. Is that even that's getting less true?
I think the way it's working now is roughly speaking, the resource allocation is like 50-50. Between like GiveWell and OpenPhil, and they're definitely in a way that you know there are both groups have people who are more or less dedicated staff to those entities, and that's true both for GiveWell and OpenPhil. And so some of the newer people have come on, like even though they've come on recently, are dedicated OpenPhil staff, and then both OpenPhil and GiveWell have work that requires very experience, senior level attention, but also entry level work where people train. And so a lot of what's, and so then, you know, there's, you know, to some extent a set, a defined set of types of work that people do when they come on. And then after that, it's really done on a, you know, Holden and I and people's direct managers kind of in conversation, figuring out what types of strengths and weaknesses people have and what that means for the places at, you know, that combine both of these organizations where they might be able to contribute most. And we're still small enough and casual enough that, you know, people can switch back and forth even on a, you know, within one day with one project OpenPhil and one project GiveWell. You know, that's not really a problem at all. And that flexibility is really beneficial because I think if we didn't have both, we'd run into times where we weren't, you know, as confident that we were giving people high quality stuff to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it, I mean, like Ellie said, there's entry level work at both and there's senior level work at both. So I think it's not really determined like that. It's just, yeah, people do go back and forth, I think, a lot right now.
Okay. So I guess that kind of addresses like resource allocation now, but have you thought much about kind of growth plans for the two different organizations? And like, is GiveWell going to continue to grow? Is it going to grow faster, slower, or anything like that? And then most of the announcements lately have been like big hires on the open fill side, so you don't hear as much about like what's going on within kind of the GiveWell side of things. I just wanted to know what the plans are there in terms of growth trajectory for both of them.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, my guess would be that most of the headcount growth will end up being on the open fill side as opposed to the GiveWell side. I mean, I think that to the extent that we need, I mean, it's not even, I guess we have something approaching like 12 full-time equivalent people on GiveWell right now, you know, something like that. And I wouldn't be that surprised if, you know, GiveWell is, at least the research part of GiveWell is more or less that size long-term. I think we definitely have some opportunities to grow on the outreach side, you know, where we have just never had, until like the last few months, a dedicated hire focused on interaction with donors and media and, you know, writing things that are more intended to bring people in rather than just do research. So there's, I think the primary opportunity for headcount growth on the GiveWell side is probably through outreach. And most of the people that we bring on, if things go well long term, will end up doing open fill related work. I mean, it's hard to know that for sure, but that would be my guess.
So do you think that there's, I guess, effectively less and less good opportunities on the research side? Like, believe that there's not as much room for kind of additional research then on the GiveWell side beyond what you're already doing?
Well, I mean, partially we've put a lot of capacity, you know, if you go back a few years, you know, GiveWell research was largely done by Holden, me, Alexander, and Natalie. You know, four people were doing a lot of work. And then we, by adding some capacity, we were able to do a little bit more. So we have eight top charities now. We've investigated others. We're able to follow all the eight charities that we recommended and assess them on an annual basis. We'll be able to look into more. But, you know, I think that we will be able to continue to expand the research with, like, the basically maintaining the number of people on GiveWell, because a lot of the people who have been on GiveWell over the last couple of years are more in training mode than they are in, doing additional research that we hadn't done before. And as a lot of the capacity that we have hired gets trained and is able to, you know, really execute on what they know how to do, you know, I expect the like productivity should go up.
One reason you've been hearing about hires for open fill, just to clarify something, is that those hires we've been writing about, Chloe and Lewis, those are really like, we felt the need to write about them that way because they were like, it's almost like grant decisions. It's like, you know, one of the main determinants of how we're going to decide what grants to make is the fact that we decided to take a bet on Chloe and take a bet on Lewis. And so it's like, that is like, it's part of like transparency about how we're allocating money, because we really can't talk about it without talking about them. And I think that is different. Like, you know, there's other people on Open Fill and on GiveWell who are doing like comparably senior work, but there hasn't been a big announcement about them, because it just isn't like hiring them wasn't the same kind of programmatic decision. It's like, you know, there's people we've hired who can do certain things really well and help us execute our research agenda. But when someone's going to have like a lot of autonomy and they're going to be like really, you know, the first and foremost reason that we make the grants we make in a certain area, that's why that's been kind of announced the way it has been. It doesn't mean those are like the main hires, but it does mean that, like, it does mean we felt the need to say, you know, if we want to be transparent about how we're making the grants we're making, this is just a huge part of that.
It's Rob here. I have one more question. If there's no one else that wants to jump in and follow up on that what you were just talking about.
Go ahead, Rob.
This is Tim. I have a question that's related to the transition of stuff.
Then go ahead.
In a programmatic way. So Ellie's post about things that GiveWell would like to see. It struck me that were those things to come to fruition, it would be more likely that Open Fill would invest in those, that GiveWell would invest in those. And so I just wanted a little clarity about how that process works and where
you see. If you know, you got an email tomorrow, somebody responding to that post and said, oh, we have this charity that's doing vitamin A supplementation. Is that a GiveWell project to follow up on, or is that an OpenPhil project to follow up on?
So the way that this has worked when we've done it so far, so you know, in that post there's a link to something we talk about as experimental GiveWell work, where we have supported those types of projects before, and the we in that case is you know, Good Ventures made grants to ID Insight, to J-PAL, and to New Incentives. You know, three organizations that meet some of the some of the criteria that we laid out in that post. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's like I don't know whether GiveWell experimental, which is sort of the topic that the charities we'd like to see post touches on, belongs within the framework of OpenPhil, or whether it's, you know, GiveWell, it's like something else that's happening that's not quite, you know, fully within the framework of OpenPhil, and other funders, whether it's Good Ventures or others, are providing the funding for it. I don't know. Holden or Carrie, do you have any like strong view on that question about GiveWell experimental and where it lives?
Yeah, I mean, I think GiveWell Experimental should live with GiveWell, because it's like basically trying to create GiveWell top charities. That's like the mission of GiveWell Experimental. And there may be some intermediate steps in there where many of the intermediate steps have to be done by a more kind of like high risk funder and are not done by GiveWell. But I think that's an appropriate place for it to live. I think, you know, I don't know. That just seems right to me, because that's I don't have much to say. It seems kind of like a common sense case. I don't feel that strongly about it.
Yeah, we see, you know, Good Venture support for those opportunities as, right, opportunities to grow the, you know, number and capacity of GiveWell top charities in the future. And when OpenPhil, you know, when OpenPhil gets to working on global health and development, I think we'll be looking for, you know, causes within global health and development that, you know, don't get enough attention to their relative to their importance and tractability. They may be like higher risk, higher reward, you know, field building kinds of opportunities. It's just coming at, it will be coming at global health and development from a different different approach. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and it's not even 100% clear that there's a need for it. I mean, it's like, I can imagine a world in which we said, you know, the best thing to do on global health and development is really to create more GiveWell top charities and get more money to them. And, you know, you could imagine that if GiveWell didn't exist, you could imagine that OpenPhil would, like, want to do that. But since GiveWell exists, and since GiveWell, I think, has, like, broader appeal than most of the stuff OpenPhil does, I think it makes sense for all the stuff relating to GiveWell top charities to live with that brand and that organization.
This is Rob again. Maybe I'll ask my question now. Good?
Yeah, why not?
One of the topics for the past couple of board meeting conversations has been, as we're talking about now, to try to understand the governance implications for the creation and funding and shared personnel structure of OpenPhil and GiveWell. And as the new websites come about, you'll be trying to communicate that in a much more deliberate way to the public, or, you know, to folks who have long been engaged with GiveWell in particular. And I'm wondering if you have, in light of the, I don't want to call it confusion necessarily on behalf of the board, but at the very least, you know, the range of questions we've asked over the past couple meetings about their relationship, if you have a way to try to gauge what would count as the successful, you know, public rollout of the branding and identity of the two different organizations, whether there's any intent to try to measure whether you're being successful at communicating what you want.
I mean, I feel like the problem we're having is that it seems like people are confused, and I think I would call the problem resolved when it no longer seems like people are confused. I don't really have plans for something more, like, quantitative than that. I don't really see something more quantitative than that being very interesting or very helpful for this question, but, you know, that is the criteria.
How do you plan on finding out whether people are confused or not?
Well, the same way that I know they're confused now, which is that they tell me that all the time. So, I mean, the whole idea, this whole issue comes from anecdote, and it will, whatever, you know, from anecdote it comes to anecdote it will go. Like, I feel like I talk to a lot of people about GiveWell, including you folks, and a lot of people seem confused, and I think I'll be able to see if that particular observation changes. And, you know, I never had a chart or a spreadsheet telling me this in the first place, so I'm not going to look for one to overturn it.
Okay. I mean, I wasn't suggesting a kind of big data collection effort, but only that I'm sure there are many folks who care about and use GiveWell diligently, conscientiously, possibly even, you know, identify a bit with the work that you do, whom you don't speak to, and whom you also want to try to reach successfully in terms of the public communication about the two organizations.
I mean, the use case is that we email someone and we want to talk to them about OpenPhil, so it'll be good to send them that website. Or I go to a talk and talk about OpenPhil, it'll be good for people to be able to go to that website afterward. I mean, that's the real use case. I mean, the confusion we've been encountering is just people we deal with because we want to deal with them because we have, you know, some important relationship with them just seeming confused. And so that's what I expect to change.
Or okay. Like if there's a reporter who wants to like write about OpenPhil, you know, right now we can send them to, you know, the content on the GiveWell website, but that's a little confusing, right? Or if we want, we can send them to the like duplicative content on the GoodVentures website, but that's also a little confusing. And so having that there, like to represent us, feels like it'll be a lot less confusing in that use case as well.
And then, I mean, Do you think that once the websites roll out, the confusion will ebb, and that will be that, or is it in your own heads when you say, Holden, that you know it's a problem now because it's not merely the board, it's when you talk to other people too. What's your expectation about when or what mechanism will curb the confusion?
I mean, I think it's just a sliding scale. Like, I think it's gotten way better. Like, I'll say right now, like, I think compared to where it was, we're 80% done already without the website being out yet. I would say that, like, there was a time when it was called GiveWell Labs, and there was no website for it, there was no logo for it, there was no email address for it. And so Holden at GiveWell.org would say, I'm writing from GiveWell. I'd like to talk to you about criminal justice reform. And someone would say, do you understand that we're not giving out bed nets? And, like, that was, you know, incredibly confusing for everyone involved. And, you know, we got business cards, we got email addresses, we got new signatures, we put up a landing page, we, you know, crafted some language that we use. So we're already 80% better. I think, seriously, the problem is 20% as bad as it was. I think when the new website comes out, I think I expect another like 80%, so we'll be at like 4% of the original badness. That's my my very precise prediction. I think what's going to change with the new website is that I think the issue now. So now I think people understand that OpenPhil is different from GiveWell. I think the issue now is people don't know what OpenPhil is. So I think they don't get them confused anymore really. But people just it's people think OpenPhil is just this thing that's like something to do with philanthropy. And then everyone wants to know why OpenPhil isn't doing X, because it's kind of like, well, if you don't know what something is, you kind of tell yourself that it's the thing you want it to be. And so, you know, I get the most basic questions about OpenPhil that are just like, so, like, you know, what do you folks do? Or, you know, will you make a grant to this thing? Because I think this thing is cool. And, like, communicating to people, what is OpenPhil? What are our limitations? What are our choices we've made that are also choices we didn't make? So that's what we created the new website to do. And so, you know, in the future, when I when I give a talk and send out the website beforehand, or when I just when there are people who care who come to some Q&A and they want to know what OpenPhil is doing, it won't be as hard for them to know, because they'll go to openphilanthropy.org and that thing will say, look, we have focus areas, this is how we chose the focus areas, this is what the focus areas are. So, and then it's going to continue to be the case that, like, we have all these people hanging out in this office, and some of them are GiveWell, and some of them are OpenPhil, and some of them do both, and that's, like, a little confusing in a way that, like, doesn't really matter to me, and that'll continue to be a little confusing in a way that'll continue to not matter to me a lot.
But I do think that separating organizations will also, like, you know, also create, you know, less confusion publicly. So that will maybe, you know, get us down to 2% of the public confusion. I do think that there will continue to be some confusion about, like, the Open Philanthropy Project versus Good Ventures. And I think that the new website and, like, related changes to the Good Ventures site will help with that. I think, you know, we have one co-funding donor for OpenPhil now. Like, hopefully there will be more in the future, you know, and that will help with that. I know this isn't exactly the question that was asked, but I do think it's a related one. So that's something we're also thinking about.
But Terry, I mean, that gets at the, I mean, one of the concerns that, I mean, if we're going to trade in anecdotes dressed up in percentages of people, the, you know, when I am, you know, either just speaking about GiveWell and its evolution or feeling somewhat ambassadorial and representing GiveWell in various conversations, and I explain open philanthropy, for anyone that is already familiar with GiveWell and, in fact, uses the site in order to drive some of their own giving, among the first questions they ask is, it sounds like a great idea. Will I also get, you know, recommendations on OpenPhil? Am I going to be asked? Will there be information for me to make donations too? And, I mean, the answer to that question is sort of and sort of not, so far as I can make out. And that's a pretty elementary question for people in terms of the identity of the two organizations.
Yeah, I think
people are confused about that.
Yeah, I think the answer is mostly not for at least a long time. I think that'll be a lot clearer when the new website is up, because you'll say, what is this OpenPhil thing? Maybe I'll go there and get a recommendation. And then you'll go there, and hopefully the website is set up in a way that is pretty clear what's going on and what's happening and what isn't happening. And, you know, if it's not, we'll get some complaints and we'll try and do something about it. I mean, you know, I'll also say this is not, like, highest on my list of, like, confusions that bother me. Like, there's things that are confusing, and I mean, you know, there's a lot of people are still confused by GiveWell, and I just don't, right? I mean, it doesn't matter to me. There's confusion that bothers. So the confusion that bothers, like, the thing that was happening before was terrible. The thing that's happening now, where people don't know what OpenPhil does, is bad, and I think that is going to, you know, be much less of an issue.
What would you say to those people who want to know, like, will OpenPhil have recommendations for them?
I would say basically not. I would say, you know, I would say we're like, we're doing something different.
Well, I'm just trying to give Rob some.
Yeah.
Rob, we can talk about this offline, and I'll give you some more, you know.
Right.
My last
thought about this, and I'm happy to take this offline. It seems, I mean, what you came to at the end there, Holden, I think, is some version of, well, if there's, you know, we'll make a good faith attempt to communicate what the difference is, but if the confusion remains, you know, like, we're indifferent. It doesn't really matter to us. We're going to do the work. We seem to be going well on the way we care about
it. All right, go ahead.
I was done.
So I wanted to clarify that there's, the thing I'm trying to say is that there are some confusions that cause problems for us and some that don't.
And the confusion would be about whether
it's
or not
different
you can,
from what. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I think it'll be pretty clear when you come to our website that there's not, like, a recommendation. Like, GiveWell is, like, pretty easy to find the recommendations. On our website, it'll be, like, pretty clear that there aren't any. But, yeah, I mean, my priority is confusions that, like, interfere with the work we're trying to do. I mean, I think, and interfere with our mission. I mean, that's the confusion that is my priority.
Agreed. I'm not against that priority, yeah.
So So, all right. Okay.
So this is Tom. I have one more question. And before I get to that, I just want to say I think Rob's concerns are very legit on a distinction. I mean, I sort of commented on that before. I won't string that out, but I would just encourage you guys to continue to sort of look at that thoughtfully. But anyway, my question is on a different topic. I wanted to go back quickly to the audience question. It sounds like, I mean, first of all, the forecast web traffic numbers and money move numbers are awesome, and I'm very excited about it. You guys should be proud of it. I get the sense that, you know, there are large donors and small donors, and that in general it's mostly individual donors, but I'd be curious sort of if there's any more detail you can tell us about institutional, both institutional donors and institutional involvement. I mean, how much are foundations participating and looking at you guys these days? Is there a higher level of acceptance in sort of the traditional foundation and philanthropy world of Givewell? Are you guys seeing that? I mean, what's sort of the level of institutional acceptance of Givewell and Open, well, mostly Givewell, I guess, at this point? And, you know, how is that changing?
I mean, I don't think there's much of an obvious change on that front. I mean, we're pretty focused on the, you know, GiveWell's core bread and butter. And I think some of the, you know, if you think back to our earliest days and some of the, I guess, the lack of acceptance, you know, may have come from us having a broader, you know, talking about broader topics than we do now. And so I think, you know, largely speaking with GiveWell, you know, we're not engaging with the philanthropic community more broadly beyond the, you know, the people who are important to the research we're doing, either charities we're reviewing, academics or other subject matter experts who can really help inform our work, and then donors. So there really hasn't been like a huge, you know, I can't really point to any like significant evolution on that front. I mean, there certainly are anecdotes of, you know, people in, I don't know what to call it, like just the traditional philanthropic world wanting to come in chat with people here about how we do things, how we think about metrics, how we think about evaluation. You know, there's been some more of that. We've also had some, you know, some inbound interest from, you know, some other like philanthropists who are like large enough that they could be reasonably small, like major foundations. I guess that's a weird way of putting it.
Large enough to be reasonably small major foundations.
So, I mean, there is some of that, but, you know, by and large, the thing that what has been true for the last few years remains true, that, you know, we're largely talking about interest from individual donors who are really excited about proven cost-effective top charities, and, you know, these donors are giving between, like, $50 and, you know, $1 million or $2 million, and that's sort of where the, you know, the core demographic is.
Okay, yeah, that's helpful. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. I'm kind of curious where it stands. And to me, it's a little odd that the foundations who are trying to delve into a lot of the topics you guys are trying to delve into wouldn't have, you know, some dialogue with you. And I don't think that's your fault. I'm just kind of curious why it hasn't happened more organically.
I don't think most foundations, so I think what Ellie said, like there's individual donors who give a lot who are coming to us and are very interested in what we do. I think most of the foundation, like if a foundation is like a big foundation with a lot of staff, they're usually just like not looking for the kind of thing that GiveWell offers. They're looking for something, you know, kind of like groundbreaking or whatever, not like a, you know, cost-effective, proven, scalable way of helping people. So I don't find myself looking at a lot of foundations and saying, oh, they should be using GiveWell. There might be some, but yeah, I don't find myself thinking that very often. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
If anyone has any other questions, now's a good time to throw out whatever you have. We've definitely covered what, you know, the updates we wanted to present. And if you don't have questions, it's fine. I mean, I think this has been a useful update, and we can certainly wrap up the call.
Sounds good. Right, thanks, everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night.